Hey, y'all. How's it going? Welcome to the show. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org is my website where I keep all my stuff. And, the Liberty Radio Network. That's where I do the show here, live from noon to 2 Eastern Time, 11 to 1 Texas Time. And, so happy to be, back on the show. Got to do the show live on Friday from New Hampshire, a live remote. Well, it's always live, but I mean, live remote in front of a bunch of people, studio audience, like, All in the Family or something, you know. That was kind of cool. Got to talk with Jeff Tucker. Got to meet, Mark and Ian from Free Talk Live and Liberty Radio Network. So that was cool. Got to meet, Derek J., whose movie you hear advertised on this show all the time, and a few other people. So that was all right, man. I went up there and gave a speech to the New Hampshire Liberty Forum. And, thanks to the organizers and the sponsors and the inviters and the coordinators and all the people who helped me to get there and back and had me out there. And I'm sorry that the speech sucked. It really did. See, what happened was, I was overprepared, and I ended up cutting out huge portions of it. Huge parts of the speech weren't even in it. And then I still had way more than time. And it was all just too much detail, not enough story. And I was watching the audience, and everybody's just like, oh, God. For whatever reason, they felt obligated to still sit there or something. Otherwise, I'm not sure. I bet if I just turned my back for 15 seconds and said, go ahead and go, I won't watch you, they'd all run out the damn door. But, you know, I was right about everything and everything. I'm right about everything and everything. I just didn't do that good of a job giving a speech. And, no, it's all right. It's all right. Because usually when I give a speech, I start off real nervous and I start off real clunky. But then by the end of it, I think, yeah, that went pretty well, right? But no, this time I know that it didn't. Well, so you guys need to hire me to give speeches more, man. I need practice. Oh, and then the seat on my Southwest flight home, it was very, very concave, the back of that seat. So very uncomfortable. So I couldn't sleep. And so I kept spacing out, and all I could think was, and it was obvious immediately, it didn't take hours, what I woulda, coulda, shoulda said if I had a do-over. That's how I need to prepare my speech. Okay, pretend you just failed at giving your speech, and now you have your chance at your do-over. What speech would you give now, Horton? That's the question. And so then, it would have been an entirely different speech. It would have been a lot heavier on narrative and understanding, and probably a little bit lighter on the finer points. This one guy was trying so hard to stay awake. I'm glad he didn't fall out of his chair. Anyway, and thanks to, I think it was Jim for the ride to the airport too. No, was it Jim? I think I called him Jim and he was like, no, it's not Jim, it's cool Mustang, though. All right, anyway, so thank you, New Hampshire, for having me out. I'm sorry the speech didn't go that well. I wasn't underprepared. I was overprepared, but it was underprepared, too, because if I had been perfectly prepared, then I would have cut some stuff out and got it back down to size. Anyway, so usually my speeches go okay. Not this one. Wisconsin. Anthony and I did one in Wisconsin. That one didn't go well either. Because I got there and it was a very small group. Because it was a big football game night. So everybody was gone. So I should have just chucked my speech in the trash and just talked to the kids for a minute. Instead, I sat there and read them a 4,000 word article that I wrote. That's stupid. Anthony's was good, though. Anyway, so, Adventures of Scott Horton's traveling and speech giving. Thank you again, everybody, for having me out there anyway. And, so the Kickstarter. Check this out, man. I forget where we were at. I guess I did get to mention this on Friday a little bit, but we're already at almost 200% of the goal. And we were over 100% of the goal in the first day, before 24 hours was up. And, wow, thanks, everybody. That's really great of you. And so here's the thing, though. I don't have all the details yet, so I'm being vague. What's going to happen is I'm going to talk with Sneaker. Is he in the chat room today? Hey, Sneaker, are you listening? Anyway, I need to talk with Sneaker, and I need to figure out a good, a solid dollar amount on the servers that he wants to buy. Because I figure you people are pledging more than the amount. Still, it's a Kickstarter thing. You want it to go back into, you know, straight into the business here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a survey of all the people who've donated so far, and I'm going to say, would it be cool with you if we go ahead and change the goal now and try to raise this much more, and then that would be enough to take care of hopefully the entire YouTube project and the servers, and then hopefully the cost of all the silver and the shipping, and cuz I got to send out books and there are rewards that you get if you donate to the thing, right? So we got to cover all those costs too, but it seems like we still got 9 days to go. And if we were able to raise 200% of what we were asking for in just a couple of days here, then, you know, maybe 5 days, I guess. So, then maybe if we reorient the thing a little bit, we can get the servers taken care of too. Cause I got my own servers, donated by, listeners to the show, but they're old and ugly now. They need a good replacing, and Sneaker was saying, I think he was saying it was going to be a grand or two, actually. I'm not really sure, but later this afternoon, for those of you who did donate through the Kickstarter and all that, you're all going to get a survey saying, hey, what do you guys think of this kind of thing, and then try to reorient the thing. But thanks, everybody. Been very generous. I really appreciate it, and I have high hopes for the YouTube project, and just plain old hopes for the servers that we can keep going. And by the way, one of the things of the YouTube project is figuring out how many MP3 links are dead links. And apparently, it's way more than I thought. Which is funny, because I've had a lot of people tell me that they've gone through and listened to every interview on the damn page. And some of those people never said, this one doesn't work and this one doesn't work. So that makes me wonder. But anyway, there are quite a few that don't work. I had someone going back through all the Gareth Porter interviews, and there were a bunch from 2007 that didn't work. I had someone this morning ask me about Michael Scheuer interviews from 2005 that don't work. So one of the scripts that he's got to write, I guess one of the first scripts he's got to write, is to find out which, if any, and all MP3 links on my server or on my WordPress site don't work. And then we got to figure out, hopefully I have those. Like those Scheuer interviews, they're not even in my folder from 2005. So maybe someone has them. Hey, does anybody have an archive of my show from 2005 that has Scheuer 1? And or actually, it's just Scheuer.mp3, and then the other one would be Scheuer 2. If anybody has those, maybe they're on the server. I don't know. Sneaker, that question's directed at you too if you're listening. Maybe they're still on the server somewhere and they're just in the wrong folder, or I don't know what the hell, but anyway, we're going to get all that worked out. I actually know somebody who had a pretty complete archive of the show going back. Lee, a guy named Lee. He's in my email somewhere there. Might have to ask him, hey, do you happen to have Scheuer from 05? But I want to get all these up on the internet, they're all on the internet. I want to get them all, well, presumably they should be. But I want to get them all up on the YouTube there. And then hopefully we get some more traffic, more eyeballs and ear holes on the show here. Because it's important, man. It's anti-war stuff. What's more important than that? Right, exactly. All right, when we come back, I'm going to denounce the very humanity of Rand Paul again. Hate that guy. Absolutely can't stand it. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at CouncilForTheNationalInterest.org. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at Darren'sCoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren'sCoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. Darren'sCoffee.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. So let me tell you this real quick here. You heard that commercial for the Taxpayers United seminar. I just got an email this morning. Obviously, it's one day out of date there, that ad. But I just got an update this morning from Jared. He said the one in Orlando went great on Saturday. And they're having another one on Saturday, April the 11th. The next, they're having quite a few more. The next one is Saturday, April the 11th in Las Vegas. And so that's the Taxpayers United of America. It's taxpayersunited.org/govpensions. And again, in case you missed it, it's kind of a seminar workshop on how to FOIA to find out the truth of how much your local tax parasite government employees are sucking off of you, and how to publicize it and do something about it. And so I just think that's great. Do you have any idea how much money cops and judges and prosecutors and other of the worst people in our society make on average? And even the lowest level so-called civil servants make more than people in the free market by a long shot, and their pensions are there are people who cops and teachers and people making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. They're just raping you, man. The money they're taking out of your check is going to all things you would disapprove of if you knew. Anyway, so there you go. Saturday, April the 11th in Las Vegas. Go to taxpayersunited.org/govpensions. taxpayersunited.org/govpensions. And by the way, I know this show is primarily an anti-war show, not a libertarian show as such or whatever the hell. And I have a lot of left-leaning type listeners, and I've gotten a couple of angry emails about this. Rest assured, and you should know that Taxpayers United of America is not a front for the Koch brothers. Has nothing to do with the Kochs whatsoever. And the guys who run it are hardcore individualists and anti-imperialists, anti-police state, anti-empire in every way. It's not some, you know, corporate, fiscal, conservative, pretend to care about liberty for your own sake kind of thing, you know? These guys are hardcore, real-ass libertarians. I'm proud to help represent them. So, you know, one of the angry emails I got just said, I assume that this is the Kochs. Well, okay, that's great, but that's not worth anything. And in fact, it's not. It has nothing to do with the Kochs. So there you go. All right. Now, to important business, other important business, Rand Paul. Now, you know, here's the reason that I get all bent out of shape about Rand Paul. And I've been warning about this publicly. I've been discussing this ever since I talked to him when I interviewed him back in 2009. I came right out because I'm an honest guy, and I just said I don't like this dude and I don't trust him, and I see how he is, and I'm telling you, he's just going to keep getting worse because he's already proven he doesn't have any principle. And when it comes down to it, he's going to bend, and he's going to bend the wrong way. In fact, all across, you know, political society or whatever, that's his reputation more than any other thing, is that he's a flip-flopper, that nobody knows where he really stands on anything. Imagine that. Ron Paul's son. That's what he's most known for, is pandering to everyone and anyone and contradicting himself all the time. It's incredible. And where his father always stuck to ideas, good ones, and gently but firmly defended all of them, Rand just attacks people and kind of smears them. And a lot of it is one finger pointing and four pointing back at himself kind of a thing, too. Oh, yeah, Libya war was bad. That's all on Hillary Clinton, which, of course, he's right about that. But he ought to leave that kind of thing to me. He should just focus on the war and not the personal partisanship. He ain't running against her yet. He ain't ever going to be. But then he turns right around and goes, yeah, but we gotta bomb Iraq. Anyway, so now, here's what he's done. Tom Cotton, and now MJ Rosenberg said that this was an AIPAC letter. And I don't know that that's true, but he may have just been assuming that. So it doesn't really matter, though, whether, I mean, it matters for AIPAC purposes whether they were behind it or not, but we can deal with that detail later. What matters is that Senator Tom Cotton has organized this letter. It's signed by the Senate's entire Republican leadership, as well as potential 2016 presidential contenders Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and Rand Paul. Reads this article at Bloomberg by Josh Rogan. And I know Josh Rogan is kind of a neocon, he's kind of a hawk, but he's an honest guy. He's a good reporter, even if you don't agree with him on everything, and I don't agree with him on everything, but he gets a lot of great scoops, and I think you can see where, like, his bias is kind of wrong, but when it comes to the details of the facts in his reporting, I think he's a credible journalist. That's just my opinion. And anyway, it's a matter of fact, and Rand Paul's office confirmed it this morning and everything. Everybody knows it's not in dispute, Rogan's reporting here, that Rand Paul has signed on to this letter. What letter is that? It's a letter from the United States Senate, from many senators, to the Ayatollah and the other leaders of Iran, saying, in a nutshell, you should not bother making a deal with Barack Obama because it won't be worth the paper it's printed on, because he's just the president, and he's term limited, and he's only got 2 years left anyway, and the next president will be certain to not abide by this deal. And they make it a civics lesson in the Constitution. There can be no treaty without a two-thirds vote. Well, it's not a treaty. It's just an executive agreement, right? So they say, yeah, but an executive agreement, he says, a so-called congressional executive agreement requires a majority vote in both House and Senate, which I guess that would be like the UN Charter. Didn't get two-thirds of the Senate. It got a bare majority of both houses. I'm not sure how they winged that, but anyway. And then he says anything not approved by Congress is a mere executive agreement. And anyway, you see what's going on here. I don't know if it's dictionary definition treason, but it is, in effect, it's treason. It's the Republicans in Congress trying to stop a de facto peace deal, basically. The beginning of the end of the Cold War with Iran is this nuclear deal. And they're trying to prevent it. Makes you wonder why Rand was ever out of step with the Republican Party on Iran sanctions in any sense whatsoever. All he's done is go and make Jennifer Rubin mad for no reason. Because when it comes down to it, he'll sign on with the worst of them right at the deadline to try to undermine the nuclear deal with Iran like this. And why? You all know the answer. Because he thinks it's good for him. That's why. Because Rand Paul cares about one thing. Himself. He's just Hillary Clinton with a perm. That's all he is. It's exactly what he is. He's not Ron Paul's son. He's Hillary Clinton's clone. And I told you that he was going to keep doing horrible things. Oh, this, that, and the other horrible thing weren't enough for you yet, huh? Just wait. He's going to do more horrible things because he is horrible. He could be the best senator in history. And instead, he's just as bad as the rest of them. He's going to lose anyway. In America today, teachers, cops, judges, and other so-called public servants make far more than the average taxpayer. And their pensions? Well, if the people knew, they'd join us. That's where you come in. Taxpayers United of America is embarking on a great new project to train activists how to take on the parasites in your communities. The entire process, from prying loose the facts to disseminating the truth to the people. The first of these great workshops is in Orlando, Saturday, March 7th. It's just $25. For more information, go to taxpayersunited.org/govpensions. Hey, I'm Scott Horton. Watching skate videos at work. Man, the kids these days. Jesus. All right. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show. Libertarian foreign policy mostly, which means I'm against it. means my job is debunking everything that they claim is the reason why they got to do all the horrible things they do. The American Empire, that is. And listen, this thing that the senators are doing, trying to undermine Barack Obama's diplomacy with Iran here, is really bad, man. You know, Justin Logan from Cato tweeted out earlier that, you know, this is the modern Republican Party's position is any president can start any war at the drop of a hat, but he needs a two-thirds supermajority to try to make peace with anybody. As long as he's a Democrat, not that a Republican would try to make peace with anybody. And, you know, this would be the one good thing Barack Obama ever did. And, you know, here's what's funny about it, too. And Gordon Prather said this back in 2008, maybe 2009, when Obama first came into power. Gordon Prather wrote an article called Obama the Great. And he said all he has to do to become Obama the Great, at least for a day, you know, to get a good celebration out of antiwar.com, is just give a speech and say, hey, as long as I'm president, this government will never bomb any IAEA safeguarded facilities anywhere in the world. That's our policy. Okay? That's it. There's your peace deal. That's it. That's all you needed to thwart all of the entirety of the Likud, AIPAC, neocon, Iran agenda in the Obama years. Hey, as long as a nuclear facility is safeguarded by the IAEA, I will never command the American military to attack it. That's all he had to do. That's all he had to do. He makes it as complicated as he possibly can. He leaves himself open to getting completely screwed in the end by the right, and they're doing everything they can. The Prime Minister of Israel comes to America and instructs the Congress that it is their job to thwart Barack Obama's attempted de facto peace deal, beginning of a peace deal, with the Iranians over their nuclear program. And they all jump up to do it, and Rand Paul with them. And you know, here's the thing about it, man. Here's the thing about it. All the people who are Republican, I don't know if Democrats are signing this thing too, but anyway, I'm sure some of them are. But all the people who are the war hawks on Iran and on the nuclear issue, they don't know what they're talking about. They're completely full of it. All they've got is a bunch of crappy talking points. So all Rand Paul has to do to win the fight on the Iran nuclear issue is just tell the truth. Just get out there and do like what his father would do and say, listen, Iran is a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. They've had a safeguards agreement with the IAEA since the 1970s, kids. They're not in violation of their safeguards agreement. They're not making nuclear weapons. This whole thing is bogus anyway. Now, do the American people insist on having a Cold War against Iran for the next 35 years? Or can we all get on with our lives now? And now what's Tom Cotton going to say to that? Because I believe that maybe there could be a mysterious secret nuclear program that nobody knows about. Yeah, great argument, Tom Cotton, but you just lost. That's all he has to do to win is just tell the truth. And instead, what does he do? Oh, gee. I guess, let me break out my abacus. And, yep, according to my calculations, I'll be a little bit better off in the fundraising and the vote total, maybe, I guess, if I side with the devil on this one. It's just... Now, you know, I understand if you're a senator and people talk about you like maybe you could be president one day, that must, you know... be pretty nice. It should also possibly occur to you that maybe that's a bunch of crap. You can't be the president. I'm going to let you be the president. The fact that he won in Kentucky, became a senator in Kentucky, that is a miracle. And he'll probably stay there because incumbents do pretty good. And I'm sure he's, you know, made friends flip-flopping all around in Kentucky just the same way he does on the national level. to keep that spot. But what if Rand Paul had just accepted that he was never going to be the president? And what if he decided that what he was going to do was get up there and be the best senator in world history? Get up there and be what we all, the only things that Ron was lacking, right? A Senate seat instead of a House seat. And the youth to participate on that level in the 2010s, right now. And the eloquence that he used to have, he's kind of getting a little more stuttery as he gets older, which people do, no problem. I'm not making fun of him or anything, I'm just saying. Rand Paul, if he would just say, "You're damn right, my father's right about this, that, the other thing," and defend those positions when they attack him. And if he would just be a good person and have those same positions that his father does, like legalizing drugs, like supporting a nuclear deal with Iran, he could defend all those positions. They're the right positions. And instead, he tries to be everything to everyone, and he's going to end up being nothing to nobody. And it's just a catastrophe, man. And you know what? Man, what if it works? What if in the Iranian media today and in Iranian politics today, they got that letter and that's it? What if Khamenei withdraws his support from the negotiations at this point and says Rand Paul really has a point, man? If he's the kindest dove in all of presidential politics in America, and he's telling us, screw you, I'm not going to abide by any deal if I'm president, then why are we negotiating with lame duck Obama at this point to limit our program? What if it works? What if Rand Paul helps destroy the nuclear deal with Iran? I mean, really, nothing, right? Really, the status quo is, well, they'll still have an IAEA safeguarded nuclear program, a civilian nuclear program, and they're going to need better than just talking points to get us into a full-scale war with Iran. And so we'll go back to the status quo, which still sucks, and which still is an economic war against the entire population of Persia, including the grandmothers and the tiny children. And it's a nightmare. And why? Because America's mad because they overthrew our sock puppet military dictatorship that ruled over their country? We got a right to hold a grudge about that? The Shah was dying of cancer anyway. He was dying anyway. You're mad because they overthrew the Shah's ghost? That Ike Eisenhower and Jack Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter had no right to foist on them in the effing first place? Are you crazy? Well, I don't like how they overthrew that sock puppet fascist dictatorship that used to torture their people to death all day for fun. They don't have a right to declare independence from us. Say the Americans? After 35 years of this? Over a fake crisis over a safeguarded civilian nuclear program? That's treason, man. That's what it is, dude. That's what it would be if you did it. Obama'd prosecute your ass for it, too. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey, all right, so I'm tweeting to Josh Rogan right now. He's going to be on CNN. Here, I got to change it from what's it called to the other thing here. Let me know, guys. Or I got the closed caption on. I don't know. It's kind of hard to do it during the show, but if anybody's got that on. I just tweeted to Josh, old friend of the show. I don't know. I asked him, Josh, do you know if the text originated at AIPAC? MJ answered. I asked MJ Rosenberg, can you confirm that AIPAC came up with this letter? It's a side detail, kind of. I mean, it's for use against AIPAC. It doesn't matter whether it was Tom Cotton's own idea or not at this point. It's the effect of the letter is the highest priority here. But I want to know. And so MJ said, no, but trust me, man, it always is. That's exactly how it always works. So, but he did admit that, no, he can't confirm it. So I just sent a tweet to Josh Rogan asking if he knows whether the text originated at AIPAC or not. I guess we'll see if he answers on that. And see, here's kind of my thing about this, too. I did this, I was interviewed last night for this podcast. Her name is Marcella. And I forgot, I'm sorry, the title of the podcast is The Liberty Something. But anyway, she's very libertarian, very, very libertarian. So it was fun. Great show. And she asked me on to talk about ISIS and, you know, Iran and all whatever. But mostly we ended up spending the whole interview just talking about Ron Paul and how great Ron Paul is. And it was cool because I haven't had that conversation in a while. If you've been listening for a while, I probably didn't say anything you hadn't heard me say a million times. But it's been a few years anyway. And it just kind of took me back. It was, you know, I had a chance to say a lot of different things about what I think about Ron. And including defending him from accusations against him and different things. And so it just reminded me how much I really appreciate Ron Paul. I've always meant to get that classic, you know, politician portrait of him. You know the one I'm talking about. It's the same one he had for years, ever since like 98 or something like that. I would always want to have that like hanging over my fireplace like people have FDR. Like, you know. That's who Ron Paul is to me. He is the greatest American hero ever. He is. I put him on such a pedestal. It's absolutely ridiculous, maybe. And then as soon as the interview was over, I went to Twitter and they said, here's Rand Paul guilty of treason. Here's Rand Paul trying to undermine the Iran nuclear deal. After all this, after he stood up to the Republicans halfway a couple of times on the sanctions. He voted for some of the sanctions. And he said, I agree, this is the best way to bring them to the table. Well, that's a bunch of crap, and it was wrong of him to do, but okay. But then there were other times where a year ago, and again just recently, when it mattered the most, where he said, no, I think sanctions at this point would undermine the talks. And if we supported sanctions to bring them to the table, now we got them to the table. And we gotta give the president a chance to negotiate this deal, man. And so he faced him down twice on that. He didn't really, it was kind of unnecessary. Obama faced him down twice on that. In both state, the last two State of the Union addresses, he told the Senate, don't do it, all right? I'll veto it and it'll ruin things. But now here he is signing on to this one for no reason at all. For AIPAC reasons, for Sheldon Adelson reasons. And anyway, it's just sad to me. You think about all the potential there, man. Even if he only got one term as the best senator ever, just think of the damage he could do. I mean that in a facetious way. The good damage he could do. Just getting up there and giving Ron Paulian speeches, telling the truth to the people. You know, Ron Paul would give some great speeches, but they wouldn't generate headlines because he was in the House. But you put Ron Paul's words in Rand Paul's mouth and put them on the floor of the United States Senate, that's a headline a day, man. Because and it's not all obscure issues and stuff. It's the most important stuff. And just to think of all the potential blown there, I guess. I don't know. That's what gets me. And then here's the other thing about this, man. Let me make something clear to you about Iran. You hear a lot of stuff about Iran's nuclear program. They won't cooperate with the IAEA and all this other thing. The IAEA has a job under the safeguards agreement to account for all the nuclear material. And that's what they do. And they continue to verify the non-diversion of the nuclear material. It's all accounted for. From womb to tomb, basically, more or less, from mine through refinement, through conversion, through enrichment, it's all, the whole fuel cycle is monitored by the International Atomic Energy Agency. That's not a problem. The agency has continued to verify the non-diversion of declared nuclear material to any military or other special purpose. They say over and over and over again for decades. For decades. Well, the whole time. They've had nuclear material actually introduced into the machines since, well, I guess only 05. But anyway, they've been inspected. All their facilities have been inspected completely. That's not a problem. But then there's an entire separate mandate on the IAEA from the UN Security Council that says, well, you got to investigate these and the other things. And they had different things, different resolutions at the UN Security Council level saying you have to cease all enrichment, which now they're throwing that out, thank goodness. Because it was a non-starter always anyway. Guaranteed Cold War still anyway. But then the other thing was a mandate that IAEA gets to inspect the centrifuge manufacturing facilities, where there's no nuclear material, but we just want to see all your centrifuges and how you make them and where you make them and everything about that. And also we want to look at all your missile facilities and everywhere that you're designing your imagine any, the UN telling the Americans, you have to let us into the facilities where you design your missiles. No. Well, actually, with these goons, who knows what they might let them do, but you understand my point. You wouldn't let them. And anyway, it has nothing to do with the IAEA's legit mandate. So when people go, oh, the IAEA is being obstructed. Yeah, but they're saying, let us look under your kitchen sink. But that's not part of the deal. And they're saying outright, let us look into things that we concede have nothing to do, particularly with nuclear material. And then there are the investigations into the possible military dimensions, the alleged studies, the smoking laptop. That's all the same thing. Possible military dimensions, alleged studies, smoking laptop. Bogus. Bogus, 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 bogus. Completely and totally and thoroughly debunked. Just look at the chain of evidence. Where'd it come from? The Mujahideen Ekalk communist terrorist cult sock puppet of the Israeli Mossad. Come on. And here's the thing about it. It isn't just because Gareth Porter says so. It's because you got to read what Gareth Porter writes about it, which is that even the hawks at the IAEA, like Ollie Heinonen, says, yeah, no, I don't really believe in it either. I mean, we don't. There's no real reason to believe it's true. Mohammed El-Baradei didn't believe in it. Robert Kelly, the former American chief scientific whatever, the mucky muck at the IAEA, says this is all bogus. And Gareth Porter has shown why to believe it's forged. And, you know, very, very likely, you know, I don't know if you say proved, but he's shown that this is nonsense, man. Oh, look, guys, they're designing a delivery vehicle for a warhead they don't have to fit on a missile that's already obsolete. But at the time the documents were forged, it wasn't known that the missiles were obsolete. The Iranians were working on their new generation of missiles in secret. But you would think that they would have let the warhead designers know, huh? Forgeries. And then he has all about the chain of custody where, in fact, the military, I guess the people who forged the documents were assuming the military had control over the main uranium mine, but they didn't. The university did, or whatever. The other atomic organization did, and whatever. And Gareth had all the documents to show how what they had made was a pretty good educated guess, but they'd guessed wrong. And so the forgery reflected their wrong guess. And then on and on like that. And then what, the green salt experiments? Oh yeah, no, they need to look into how to enrich a tiny little bit of uranium tetrafluoride. That's one uranium and five fluorides, right? I hope. I don't know what the hell. Yeah. And then, but no, you gotta refine it further, convert it to uranium hexafluoride gas. Uranium tetrafluoride, they call it green salt. It's little granules that look like green salt. Well, so you can't enrich that in a centrifuge, dummy. So I'm supposed to be concerned that they had an experiment about laser enrichment of green salt when we know they have a safeguarded conversion facility for making uranium hexafluoride gas. Anyway, on and on like that. Debunked 1,000 times and for going on 10 years straight now. The bogus accusations against Iran. Give me a break. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now. Selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Got about 3,600 interviews going back to 2003. All saved up for you in MP3 format there at scotthorton.org. Join up the chat room if you like. Hey, chat room guys. How are you guys doing today, man? Chat room guys, that's scotthorton.org/chat. And it's a free node IRC chat, but it's also just a plain old browser page, too. scotthorton.org/chat. If you use IRC free node thingamajig, then it's hashtag Scott Horton Show. So hang out during the live show. If you like, if you can. All right. So, man, I got so much more news to talk about than just complaining about Rand Paul. I better move on here. Let me just say real quick. Did you notice the plot of this new robot movie? I don't think it's on the Pirate Bay yet, so I haven't seen it. But the premise of the movie is the police brutality is out of control. And so what do? They hire a bunch of robots, right? The problem is there's no accountability whatsoever for those who enforce the law for the state, so-called enforce the law, who enforce the edicts of the state. There's no accountability when they commit crimes. That's why they abuse people, because they never, ever, 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 ever get in trouble for it. So then what's the solution? Hire inanimate objects that cannot possibly be held responsible for what they do. Perfect. It sounds to me like if I was a movie producer and they brought that script to me, I would say, yeah, let's do it. That absolutely is predicting the future of the United States of America right there to a T. That's exactly how it is. Because what else are you going to do? Start holding police and prosecutors and judges accountable for the lives that they ruin? Why? Finality is very important, young man. You need to understand that. So, yes, of course, that's exactly what they would do. Isn't that exactly what they would do? Just hire robots. Well, let's see. Either we can start prosecuting cops for murdering people, or we can hire robots to murder them. And then that way there will be less of a controversy, I guess. Somehow. Yeah. Very, very plausible plot for a movie. So I'm totally, I don't know how well they actually carried it out, but I'm buying the premise big time. But, I've read Neil Postman. That's why. I like that guy, Postman. All right. So, hey, let me tell you about this. You're not going to believe me, but yeah, you will, because, you know. Did I already mention this on the show last week? They are talking about reclassifying the al-Nusra Front in Syria as the moderates. Now, really, ever since 2011, at least 2012, by the very beginning of it, the fighters loyal to the goals of al-Qaeda and loyal to the person of Ayman al-Zawahiri have been fighting in Syria and receiving the benefit of American aid to the rebels, quote-unquote. They would give the money and equipment to the so-called Free Syrian Army, and then it would all end up in the hands of al-Nusra one way or the other. It wasn't until the spring of 2013 that Golani and Baghdadi had their big falling out, and Baghdadi decided that he was going to create the Islamic State and break off from al-Nusra. But you probably have heard. You know, they've been getting us ready for this for a while, I think, if you think about it. You know, there's a piece of propaganda that says that the Islamic State is too brutal even for Al-Qaeda. Actually, I don't know if that's really just about softening us up, or that's just kind of a simpleton's way of looking at it. For public relations purposes, the Al-Nusra Front is a little more careful about hearts and minds rather than simply scaring the hell out of everybody. You know, they get that you got to scare the hell out of everybody, but also give them a reason to want to more or less trust you because you're going to be the best they could do anyway, kind of way of looking at it, where the Islamic State guys were worse. But that's not really the split. The split between al-Nusra and ISIS is not over brutality. Al-Nusra guys are a bunch of head chopper, crazy suicide bombers, too. The split is over who's taking orders from who. And the split is over whether to keep fighting and try to bring the entire region into a state of war and revolution, or go ahead and declare the caliphate now. It was the premise of Al-Qaeda in the first place. Really, it was Zawahiri convinced bin Laden in the first place that we gotta attack the Americans, because we'll never get rid of King Fahd, we'll never get rid of Mubarak, we'll never get rid of King Abdullah, we'll never get rid of these sock puppet American fascist dictatorships and kings and emirs and whoever's until we get rid of the Americans. And so we got to attack them so we could bog them down, bleed them to bankruptcy, and force them all the way out, like with the USSR in the 80s with the Americans' help at the time. And only then declare a caliphate and try to overthrow all the kings and all that, because there's no point. You can't overthrow the kings because the Americans will come back at you. In fact, you could say that Obama's now fulfilling Al-Qaeda's vision another step right now by declaring war against the caliphate and proving Zawahiri right, that the war has got to continue against the far enemy, that Americans have to get bogged down there 100% again. Air war, not good enough. Send your army divisions again. That's what Al-Qaeda wants. And probably is what they're going to get. That's the real split. But anyway, I'm off on a tangent, kind of, but the point being that the al-Nusra guys and the ISIS guys, they're not fighting over you guys chop off too many heads, you should chop off fewer heads like us. That's not the fight. The fight is over tactics and strategy and command. You know, human, earthly causes, just like the entire conflict in the first place. And so now, unbelievably, sorry, gigantic preamble there, I admit it. Almost unbelievably, you got the Director of National Intelligence is now saying basically anyone who's not ISIS is a moderate. That's what he said before Congress. Got the Moon of Alabama blog here somewhere. Let me get my proper link here, if I can find it. Yeah, to rebrand Al-Qaeda into moderate rebels. This is just too insane to be true, but of course, yeah, here it is. James Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, says, quote, "Moderate these days is increasingly becoming anyone who is not affiliated with ISIL." And so one of our challenges is, again, the recruiting and vetting part. So we picked people that not only are moderate, whatever that is, but also, that's his quote. That wasn't me. That was him. Whatever that is, in Homer Simpson's voice. But also, we have to be sensitive to complying with the international rules of law, which in this environment is a pretty tough order. And so what that means is al-Nusra has to change their name. Al-Nusra has to distance themselves from Ayman al-Zawahiri and al-Qaeda. And so, now here we go. It says here, intelligence officials from Gulf states, including Qatar, have met with the leader of al-Nusra, Abu Muhammad al-Ghalani, several times in the past few months to encourage him to abandon al-Qaeda and to discuss what support they could provide. They promise funding once it happens. The Nusra Front is listed as a terrorist group by the United States and has been sanctioned by the UN Security Council. But for Qatar, at least, rebranding Nusra would remove the legal obstacles to supporting it. So in other words, since the declaration of the caliphate, the politics of backing the caliphate and their, you know, mirror image in al-Nusra has become a little bit tougher. And I don't know why they even bother. It's like, why torture a guy into telling you a lie about Saddam? Just make it up. You got to torture the guy? What's the point? Just go ahead and back Al-Qaeda. You know you have been all along anyway. Hell, David Sanger, you see, here's how it works. David Sanger is pure evil, and everything he writes about Iran and their nuclear program is a lie, except when it agrees with what I'm telling you. In that case, he's admitting that I'm right. But if he disagrees with me, then that damn David Sanger. But even David Sanger admitted that in, back in 2012, that all the money and guns that the CIA's given are ending up in the hands of the kooks. And the Washington Post and the LA Times and the rest of the major media have agreed. All along they've said so. They admitted so. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here, and I'm so excited about Commodity Discs from CommodityDiscs.com. They're 1 ounce silver pieces with a QR code engraved on the backside. Scan the code with your phone and get the instant spot price. Commodity Discs are paving the way forward for the alternative currency community in America and around the world. The QR code Commodity Disc. Technology has now finally made a real free market silver currency viable. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one free. That's CommodityDiscs.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. Oh, yeah, so I meant to say there, too, that ISIS has never really attacked the United States. It's not truly an enemy of the United States. I mean, they murdered some American prisoners, and that's a pretty big deal, but I'm not certain it's a casus belli. And so even if ISIS is 100 times more brutal than Al-Qaeda, if Al-Qaeda gave up killing civilians in 2006, which is not the case at all, of course, but I'm just saying, hypothetically. So? Still, you declare yourself loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, then you're volunteering for an American bullet to your head. And I'm not saying that the U.S. government should exist or do things to people or anything necessarily, but I'm just saying, someone who's voluntarily joined up Al-Qaeda has voluntarily joined up to be an enemy of the United States of America. And so that goes for the al-Nusra Front. Now, then again, at the same time, and I don't know if this is Zawahiri's wishes or if this is the locals' call the shot on this, for the most part, al-Nusra has not really tried to, as they've accepted recruits from Europe coming in, they haven't tried to really send them back to fight a war against the West. They seem to really have been focused on Assad, I guess maybe thinking they could possibly take him, and why divert onto other things if they think they can do it? And of course, as Seymour Hersh reported, and it was verified too, man, Gareth Porter had a great one backing up Hersh, others did too. It was al-Nusra that did the sarin attack in order to try to get America to take their side against Assad in 2013. It was really just because the military didn't want to do the war. I mean, imagine that. The politics of that were like, wow, Obama really wants us to really not just CIA some guns and some money, but now we're going to really send in the Air Force and maybe the Marines in order to fight Al-Qaeda's war for them in Syria. Is that where we are now in the American empire, really, where the standing army is the restraint on the unwise and unworthy passions of their civilian superiors? Mr. President, you really want us to fight a war directly for Osama's rotting corpse right now? After we just got done doing this in Libya, you want to do it again in Syria? I'll tell you what. And I had a guy email and tell me he knows that this is the case. Now, what they did was they said, oh, we could do it, but basically we're going to have to send the entire military to do it, right? Here's our order of battle for the planned Syria attack, Mr. President. All our planes, all our tanks, all our ships, all our men. Because short of that, you know, we just can't assure success. In other words, a poison pill. And of course, it also, as Ray McGovern pointed out, Dempsey threw Obama under the bus. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, remember in 2009, well, many times, Petraeus and other generals have, and including Dempsey, really, in more recent times regarding ISIS, have tried to buffalo and push Obama into doing things. But in the case of Syria 2013, Dempsey actually threw Obama under the bus and told the Senate, they asked him why now, and he said, I don't know any reason why it must be done right now. And so, you know, in other words, hey, the president's out on his own limb here. You won't hear me speaking for the Pentagon saying that this is what we think is a priority. So that was, thank goodness for that. But in any case, for them to be talking now about trying to take these guys, they're going to say, oh yeah, no, Zawahiri, we're no longer loyal to him or his goals. No, we're moderate now. Quote unquote, whatever that means. That's the words of James Clapper. Whatever that means. Whatever that means is, if they say, yes, I was loyal to Al-Qaeda yesterday, but not today. Now they're moderate. Because, I don't know. I mean, what can you say? There's really nothing else to call it but treason, man. And I try not to throw that around too bad. I know I was accusing Rand Paul of that earlier too, but I mean, what do you call it? Deliberately putting tow missiles and dollar bills in the hands of Al-Qaeda fighters in Syria. The guys who are veterans of the last Iraq war, where they fought for Zarqawi's guys against America and Iran. It's completely out of control. But, you know, what happened was, and it was funny, you know, I really was behind on the news, and I had seen a headline, but I hadn't gotten a chance to even read it yet, and Mitch Prothero was on the show and called me out and said, I don't know if you've seen the news, Scott, because I forgot exactly what question I asked him, but I had my premise. My premise was lacking the recent news, which was, the moderates are gone. Oh, I know what it was. I was asking him, Obama's saying that Assad still has to go, and he wants to give B-1 bomber targeting capability to the moderates now in the Wall Street Journal. And he said, well, I don't know if you saw the news, but there are no more moderates. That's it. The last of them have gone over, have been defeated and or defected over to al-Nusra now. And so that's it for that. And then, but he was more right than he knew about me and himself too. Neither of us had seen the very latest, which was, that's okay. We're just going to start calling al-Qaeda the moderates now. What? And it's not even Hillary Clinton up there. It's, I don't know who's buying it. Somebody's got to please the Israelis somehow. And that's really what this comes down to. I know the Saudis and the Qataris and the Turks, they've got an agenda. That's a big part of it. But you want to know what's going on here, really. You want to take it from someone who is in an authoritative position to say, Google this. Google Oren, O-R-E-N, Goldberg, for Jeffrey Goldberg from The Atlantic. Oren, Goldberg, Sunnis. That's all you need. And you could also add Aspen, because they were at the Aspen Fancy Pants Conference of Rich, Powerful People Talking to Each Other, or whatever it's called. And there Michael Oren just lays it out outright. He just says, I don't care. Between Al-Qaeda and the Iranian-backed Syrians and Hezbollah, we prefer Al-Qaeda. The government of Israel's point of view is, we prefer these bad guys to those bad guys. And he made it very clear why. Because those bad guys are backed by Iran. That's not Al-Qaeda. That's Al-Qaeda's enemies. The Assad government and Hezbollah from southern Lebanon, backed by Iran. And that's why the American policy is what it is. And I can't seem to come up with like a really great punchline about it to really get a laugh out of you. But at least still, it's... You got to admit how crazy ironic it is that this is treason, really, on behalf of the Israelis, is preventing a worse war, right? If the Israeli lobby was not completely hell-bent insistent that it's Assad and the Iranian-backed Baathist government in Damascus that's the true enemy in Syria, we would have a worse war against the Islamic State right now. Bush's policy was, you know, tolerate Assad, right? Cooperate with him. Pay him to torture and kill people for us. So if it was him right now, or that same strategy carried out, it just amped up, it'd be like it is in Iraq right now, where America's on the side of the Iranians and the Syrians, and the war would be against ISIS would be bigger and worse. Ha! Huh. So thank goodness that D.C. puts Israel first. Hey, Al Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first. And just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. Hey, Al Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, you guys. Thanks for listening to my show. It's the Scott Horton Show here on LRN. All right, so a little bit of Palestine news here. White House names Israel critic to top Mideast post. Now, they're using the term critic pretty generously here. But this may be kind of meaningful. But then again, we're way deep into lame duck territory here, man, in Obama's second term. So, are you familiar with the name Robert Malley? Have you ever heard of him? You might be. If you ever heard of him, it was probably in this context. Everybody said, because everybody knows, that the Israelis were prepared to completely give up the West Bank and give the Palestinians and Gaza and East Jerusalem and give the Palestinians all they ever wanted, but that pinko commie terrorist Yasser Arafat refused to accept a perfect deal because all he wanted was his own evil power, which somehow was accentuated under occupation rather than being the leader of an actual independent state somehow. But anyway, and then if you ever heard Robert Malley, then you heard that this guy said, actually, that's not quite true because I was there, and actually what happened was they offered him a deal that was really not that great, and then they just lied about what they offered him. And they pretended that it was a deal that Arafat couldn't possibly refuse and then somehow did anyway, when really it was one that anyone would have refused. And, you know, maybe tactically it was a bad move, or strategically it was a bad move on Arafat's part, that if he had gotten as much as he'd gotten, that would have been better than what he got instead, and that they could have made it better from there, maybe? I don't know. But, oh, yeah, no, he had the deal of the century. You know, and I love it the way they always frame it, land for peace, as though Israel is being invaded by this terrorist horde that will not stop terrorizing them until they give up their land. Isn't it crazy the way the whole world insists that they give up their land to these terrorists who are demanding it? Oh, except that, no, it's the terrorists' land. The Israelis are occupying it and have them under martial law for longer now than the Soviets occupied Eastern Europe. And they're not terrorists, they're people. Land for peace. End the occupation, let them have a Palestinian state because you got no right to rule them. How about that? Oh, that's kind of a different, accurate spin on the same thing there. Well, anyway, Robert Malley is the guy who said, well, you know, I was there negotiating with the Clintonites and during the time, this is at the end of Bill Clinton, 2000. And it wasn't quite so simple. So, of course, he was completely put through the ringer and all that. Now he's being given the job to lead the Middle East desk at the National Security Council. But, you know, the fact that he told the truth about that doesn't mean he's some, you know, pro-Palestinian crusader, as far as I know, and What power does he have anyway? America has no power over the Israelis anyway, other than maybe, you know, specifically requesting what time they cash their checks from us. Can you wait until tomorrow to cash that one? Because we need to borrow some more money from China first before you... Okay, thanks. Anyway, and speaking of which, here on the two-state thing, Netanyahu, this is a big deal because somebody leaked a thing, a document that claimed to be to represent Netanyahu agreeing that he would give up, that he would negotiate and give up the West Bank to be a Palestinian state. And so he's furiously backpedaling and saying, no, that's totally not true. I never said that. I would never do that. I would never say we're giving up the night and going back to 67 borders, etc. Anyway, I actually haven't read too much about that, but there's a pretty comprehensive look and retelling of the story and a little bit of opinion here in the foreword this morning. Why Bibi nixed the two-state solution. Because the Likud Party charter is Greater Israel forever. Independent Palestine never. That's why. Because anytime anyone in Likud says to the Americans, oh yeah, two-state thing, yeah, we're working on that, they're lying. It's like they lied to Bush and lied to Rice, lied to Kerry, lied to Obama, lied to everybody. You know, they're just land rustlers. That's all they are. And, by the way, the foreign minister of Israel is now coming out. Yeah, this is just a, by the way, kind of a little footnote, sort of a small detail, I guess. The foreign minister of Israel is calling for the beheadings of terrorists, which could mean anyone, any Arab arrested in the occupied territories, I guess. He's calling for them to be beheaded with axes. That's from timesofisrael.com, right-wing paper in Israel, okay? That's not some commie from Egypt or, I don't know. That's Avigdor Lieberman from the Jewish state in the Levant. Representing Western Enlightenment values. Like, cutting off people's heads with axes for resisting the occupation of their land. And of course, all the people, or many of the people living in the West Bank and Gaza, are all refugees from the rest of Israel where they got kicked out. Something like 80% of the population of the Gaza Strip are refugees. The children are refugees. Maybe they're born and raised in Gaza, but that's only because right over there, over that fence, is their father's town, their grandfather's town. So it's not just that they're an occupied population, they're basically giant occupied refugee camps. For now, about a decade longer than I've been alive. And I got some gray hairs, I'm gonna lie. All right, so that's my Israel-Palestine news, I think, here. What time is it? Oh, man, I got to go faster. Boko Haram says that they pledge allegiance to the Islamic State. I thought they'd already done that. I don't know what difference it makes, really. But you'll have American Special Forces. Probably already do have American Special Forces there. Need to get Nick Terse on the show. Terse, if... It takes all year. That's a little note had to type there so that I remember later. Are we skipping over to ISIS already? What time is it again? Yeah. Let me do ISIS news here real quick. DOD operations against the Islamic State may last years. And then, where's my other Islamic State section? I had it here. There's a map in the Washington Post of the Islamic State that's worth looking at, but it's along with a story that's saying, man, they're having a pretty tough time over there holding it together. And I don't know whether it's really propaganda or not, but I kind of like it because it confirms my bias, which is that, here's my ISIS section. It confirms my bias that the Islamic State, they're a bunch of scum. I mean, they're mostly militia fighters and conscripts, but at their leadership levels, these guys can't run a place. Especially not the worst part of Iraq and Syria, where they have hardly any developed oil resources. And I guess they have the Baji facility or whatever. They're not running it very well anyway. I don't think they're running it at all now. So they got the worst part of Iraq and Syria, basically. And we saw what the Iraqi people did to al-Qaeda in Iraq in 2006 and 7. It wasn't Petraeus. It was the local Iraqi Sunnis said, enough of you guys. Here's an AK-47 bullet for you. That's the best solution to the crisis. The ISIS crisis. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. All right, you guys. So I'm Scott, so let me just say very quickly on the Hillary Clinton email scandal that it's funny, man, political scandals where they'll only focus on like, oh, it was against the rules and, oh, come on, it's not that big of a violation of the law. And they just talk about the least important aspect of the whole thing, which, yeah, so she's a criminal for setting it up that way, of course, but whatever. That doesn't matter. Laws don't apply to people with power. That's not what's important. What's important is what's missing. And, of course, it's everything important is not in the record. Oh, she turned over 90% of the emails. So what's the big deal? The 10% is the big deal. And, in fact, one of these Republican clowns on the Bob Schaefer show, I read yesterday, I don't know if it's true or not, but yeah, it's an accusation, so it's probably right, said that the famous picture of Hillary Clinton, that's even her Twitter profile picture or whatever, of her texting on her cell phone, sitting in a C-130 cargo plane on her way to Libya, that picture, that day, there are no emails from that day, from that iconic Hillary Clinton as, you know, warming up to be commander in chief out there on missions for America and all this crap. And everybody made memes about what might she have been texting or emailing at the time and all this kind of crap, right? They don't have her emails from that day. When she was going, I don't know where, she was going to Libya? I forgot exactly what it was he said, but it was part of the Libya war. She was in the region for the Libya war anyway, getting it started. And imagine that. Seriously, here she is, as one writer put it, she's the most important cabinet member, right? After the vice president, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, and the president pro tem of the Senate, she's next in line for president if they start dying. Not the Secretary of War, the Secretary of Defense. It's the Secretary of State. That's the highest ranking cabinet member in that sense. And I guess just kind of traditionally, right? Sort of, you'd think. And so imagine, here she is. She's Secretary of State. She's gearing up to run for president, to be the current president she's working for as successor. And calculated that, well, screw him. Anything that makes me look horrible, which has got to be a good 10% of them, makes you wonder what's the rest of what she writes. Which she did turn over, but she'll just keep all that for herself. Maybe destroy it, who knows what. Has she claimed that it's not available? Is she refusing to hand it over? Are there credible accusations that justice has been obstructed? I just think it's funny how Yeah, she gets to do what she wants. She's Hillary Clinton. Haven't you read this 3-part series in the Washington Times about how she lied us into war with Libya? She does whatever she wants. She's Hillary Clinton. But I don't know. I wonder, I guess, so they're, what they're saying is, nobody cares. It's just an email scam. Oh, did you hear? She had a separate email account. That's what they're making the scandal about. The separateness of the account. Not the missing emails. The incriminating emails. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't know how they are able to divert the issue so easily. Oh, who cares if she had her email on the wrong server or not? What difference does that make, anyone? That's what they're saying on MSNBC, or like I read on Twitter, Democrats talking about it. Paul Begala was saying, oh, come on, if you can find me a Hillary Clinton supporter who would change their vote over a little thing about where her email server is, I'll give you $100 or whatever it was. All right, anyway. That's as important as that is. Maybe there's good stuff in there that we'll end up getting to see some point. But now, so my really most important subject of the day comes down to it, and that is America's role in the Ukraine crisis. Now, the good news is, according to Reuters, U.S. plan to train Ukraine National Guard on hold. A plan to train Ukrainian National Guard troops is on hold pending implementation of a ceasefire deal between government troops and Russian-backed rebels, a spokesman for U.S. forces in Europe said on Friday. And now, when they say Ukrainian National Guard battalions, they basically mean the Right Sector and Azov Battalion Nazis. Right? I wonder why they don't say the Army. Why do they single out the National Guard and not the Ukrainian Army? They're going to train the Ukrainian Army. I don't know who knows the answer to that either. Maybe Ray does. Anyway, they've called it off for now, which is great because the headline before that was that they'd called it on, man, and it was going to happen. They were still going to go over there, and they already had sent some Brits. They were going to send some Americans over there to train these guys, which is just a provocation, right after a ceasefire deal. And now here's the thing. At least they didn't do this. But it looks like there is a serious American agenda afoot to undermine the Minsk agreement. And I'll refer you to Justin Raimondo's article today at antiwar.com, F the EU Revisited. EU-US tensions come to a boil over Ukraine, and also Dan McAdams had one over at the Lou Rockwell blog as well. I forget the exact title, but something about German intelligence calls out NATO and, you know, calls them liars or whatever it was. What the hell is it? Anyway, it's good. And it's about how here we're in this delicate phase where we have a ceasefire, not really a truce, and the general who's the head of NATO, the supreme allied commander of NATO, General Philip Breedlove, the top commander in Europe, had come out and accused the Russians of sending in troops. And he kept changing his numbers around, too. He said, well over 1,000 combat vehicles, Russian combat forces, which sounds at least like he's saying infantry, right? Some of their most sophisticated air defense battalions of artillery. What is clear is it is not getting better. It's getting worse every day. But then according to Der Spiegel, German leaders in Berlin were stunned. They didn't understand what he was talking about. And it says this wasn't the first time. The pattern had become a familiar one. And German intelligence basically has outright just debunked these claims and said it's just not true. Justin writes, with each step taken by the Minsk negotiators toward a ceasefire and a lasting peace, Breedlove has sought to undo the progress made with yet another off-the-wall pronouncement about alleged Russian military intervention that, according to the Germans, has no basis in fact. The Germans are muttering that Breedlove's provocations are dangerous propaganda and wondered if Washington is trying to torpedo Minsk. The Germans put that in Der Spiegel. That they wonder if Washington is trying to destroy the peace deal. That's because, as Justin writes here, Breedlove isn't a loose cannon. He has powerful allies within the Obama administration. So this is, again, Justin Raimondo at antiwar.com today, F the EU Revisited. And the point being that, wow, man, so doesn't that make you wonder about when Merkel was in America just before the Minsk talks? It seemed like Obama was going along with her and saying, okay, go ahead and make a peace deal. What the hell? Did he try to stop her? Or was his plan then, or the national security state's plan anyway, the neocons' plan anyway, something? Because it's nice to assume the president's in charge of this stuff, but not necessarily the case. Are they really so bold that even now, after Minsk II and a ceasefire and a hopeful end of the war, that Washington, D.C. is trying to ruin this, is trying to undermine the French and the Germans, two of our three closest allies in the world, and trying to cool this thing off and prevent an escalation? All they can talk about is still, all they can talk about is sending weapons and sending trainers and accusing the Russians of invading with magical invisible forces that German intelligence immediately turns around and debunks the presence of. You know, it may come down to Barack Obama being 100 times as bad as George W. Bush here. Maybe Woodrow Wilson, too. He keeps going like this.